This interview with Sheikh Hamza Yusuf is being conducted by Haroon Sellers and brought to you by South Africa Radio.
One of the themes of your various presentations is why the West can't hate Islam and Islamic contributions to human civilization.
Right.
And yet the Muslim world, particularly the Arab one, seems to or appears to quote unquote hate the West.
Right.
Could you comment?
That's a good point, because I've also, part of that is the other side of it, why the Muslims can't hate the West. Because how many Muslims have been saved because of surgeries that were developed in the West? How many Muslims have had their children saved with spiral meningitis because of medicines that came from the West? How many people have made Hajj on an airplane that was built in the West? How many people have their livelihood is based upon a car that was manufactured in the West? I mean, there's so much good. And that's why gratitude is a beautiful thing and fairness is a beautiful thing. There is an immense amount of abuse. And I'm not going to deny that. And I don't want to be some kind of propagandist. I want people to be fair. And to be more than fair, I want them to be merciful. And I want to see the West be fair towards Islam and merciful. And I want to see the Muslims be fair and merciful towards the West. And I admit that there's an immense amount of onus on the West. I believe that. I truly believe that what has happened so far from the Muslims in terms of what they've done to the West is so insignificant compared to the harm and damage that the West has done in the Muslim world. I really believe that. And I say that with utter conviction. But unfortunately, the people that are causing the trouble are very small on both sides. And that's why the large majority of people cannot demonize all of the other people of the other side. It's just wrong. There's too many good people. There's too many fair people out there. But everybody's fearful and many are angry. I mean, the West has fear and the Muslims have a lot of resentment. And they're both very problematic emotions. And so I do want to see a greater recognition in the West on not only the contribution of Muslims of the past, but also the importance of Muslims of the present and their meaning. Because I believe that the Muslims are a unique religious community. I don't believe there's any religious community on the planet today that is as unusual as the Muslims. How our religion has survived the modern onslaught against religion is something really spectacular. And it's profound. How is it that filial piety, respect for parents, is still so profoundly prevalent in the Muslim world and yet is almost entirely absent in the West? How is it that charity is still such a central part of Muslim life, of daily life? How is that? Walking to the prayer five times a day, Muslims actually going and praying five times a day in an age when Christians have a difficult time making it to church on Sunday. How is it that the Muslims have done this? And I believe that this is just a profound presence on this planet. It's a gift from God. I want to see people just testify to that fact. Really, I want them to see that. And even though the Muslims, they've fallen on hard times, it's hard traveling for the Muslims. It's hard going right now. But in spite of it all, the Muslims have been an immense inspiration for me. They really have. And I love the Muslim community. I really do. I mean, even though all my complaining about them, it's only out of love. It's I just want to see them thriving and flourishing, you know, and in a much better state than they're in. It's as simple as that. Just open your hearts and open your minds so that these gifts can once again penetrate them. And then you'll see the limbs coming to action. Once the heart's infused with that grace, suddenly the limbs are bounding to action, leaping to good deeds.
When we use terms like, quote unquote, the West, are we not buying in to the cliche of a, quote, clash of civilizations, or at the very least, a stereotype?
That's an excellent question. And language is problematic. Personification is a problem. It's called the fallacy of personification in logic. When you take an abstract and you concretize it, you make it something concrete. And there's no doubt that the West. What is the West? It's a nebulous term. What is the East? What is the Muslim world? What does that mean? Is it Nigeria? Is it the Yorubas and the Hausas and the Igbos and the Fulanis? I mean, each one of those are distinct groups within Nigeria that view themselves as very different from the other groups. I mean, Fulanis don't view themselves as Hausas, and there are very important distinctions between those different categories. But they're all Muslim. I'm not necessarily the Igbo and the Yoruba. They're mixed. I mean, they're Muslim among them and non-Muslim. But the point is that they're different. So when I say Nigeria, who am I talking about? When I talk about Nigerians, who am I talking about? Because within Nigeria, the Igbo perceives himself as an Igbo before he perceives himself as a Nigerian. And that's true in the West. I'm a Western Muslim. I'm living in the West. I'm living in the furthest West, in California. And I'm living in the furthest western part of California. So I am a true Westerner. But I just step over a little bit. I keep moving west, and suddenly I'm in the East. If I just keep going, I find myself in Singapore. So these terms are problems. The Quran says, for instance, the Jews say that the hand of God is constrained. Their hands are constrained. Well, in the Tafsir, Ibn Juzay said one Jew said that. But if you read the Quran, there's a lot of Muslims think that all Jews say that. It's simply not true. One Jew said that. And Fakhruddin al-Razi says the devout Jews would never say that because it's blasphemous. And they wouldn't. If you go to a synagogue, there's Muslims that think all Jews say that. They don't say that. But that's part of the way language is used. And so what Ibn Juzay says, one Jew said it, but Allah said the Jews said it to indicate that whoever among the Jews accepts a statement like that is among them. So that's why in Thomas Cleary's recent translation of Quran, he does some very clever things. One of them is he says, some of the Jews will say. And that's a very useful exercise to think about. Because the Quran, for instance, it'll say that. And on the other hand, it says, from amongst the Jews are upright people. And that's what it says. So how do you square that? I mean, how do you square that? You square that by recognizing that language needs thought. And we have to be very vigilant. And that's why that question is an indication that whoever asked it is attempting to be vigilant about language. And it's really important to be vigilant about the language we use. And that's why usually when I talk about the West, I like to say, I mean, and explain what I mean by that term. Because the truth is that Muslims are everywhere. There are 25 million Muslims in Europe. There are at least, when I first heard there were 6 million Muslims in America, I had one child. I now have five. So if there have been a few hundred thousand people out of those 6 million Muslims that are in a similar situation, which I think is probably acceptable to think that because Muslims have a lot of children, we're increasing every day. There's Muslims coming in every day. There's Muslims dying too, but I mean, it's a young community in America. So I would say, you know, we might have 10 million Muslims. We might even have 15 million Muslims in America. We might have 20 million that sympathize with us, or 30. We don't know. Do you see? So my point is that we have to recognize that there is no geography anymore in those traditional pre-modern demarcations. And so it's important that we start seeing ourselves really as Banu Adam and as a globalized community.
If the so-called, quote-unquote, East hates the West, isn't it turning upon itself, its legacy?
Hatred is a disease of the heart. And that's hatred as resentment. And that's what Imam Nawawi, radiallahu anhu, talked about, that when you do not pray for your enemy, the only reason you don't do it is because of hasad. That's what Imam Nawawi said. Because he said, if you were a sincere Muslim, you would want your enemy to be guided. Now, hating his sins and his wrongs, that's a fard, ayn. That is an obligation. You have to hate kufr. But hating kufr does not mean that you don't desire for the person that it's emanating from guidance. Because as long as he is taking breaths, he is open to accepting God. مَا لَمْ يُغَرْغِرْ. The hadith says, as long as the ruah hasn't gotten to the throat, repentance is a possibility. And we want people to be in a good state with their Lord, all people. I don't want anybody to be in a bad state with their Lord. I want everybody on this planet to be in a good state with their Lord. That is my true heartfelt desire. And I'm not just saying that. I really believe that. That does not mean that I don't have my periods when I feel angry, but I see those as the things that I need to combat within myself. When I think, yeah, I would like to see Sharon get what he deserves. That's my human impulse. But my higher impulse is I would like to see him make Toba with his Lord. Toba being repentance, turning, teshuva, the Jews say, same word. Because even in the hadith, the mass murderer who killed 100 people, that's a mass murderer, he made Toba. And according to the sound hadith in the Riyad al-Salihin, Allah accepted his Toba.
Well, we've come to our last question. Historically, Islam has had the rare ability to rise from the ashes of devastation, like a phoenix. It did this after the Mongols, and even after the massacres of the Crusades. The Prophet Muhammad, upon him be peace, has set such a superior example for us that it seemed Islam bounced back every time from major setbacks. Are we going through a phase like that now?
Bismillah, I would say that we're in somewhat of a dark age in the Islamic world. I don't think we've ever been in an intellectual crisis like today because we have so few scholars in the Muslim world. We have, and that's not to say that there are not many very intelligent, educated people. There are, and I've met many, many people. But what I'm talking about at the time of the Mongol invasion, I mean, the Muslim world, they had universities that were producing large numbers of scholars at very high caliber. That's where we're really suffering, is people that really understand the religion. And for me, it's still ongoing. I mean, I'm still thinking and reading and researching and listening, and I change all the time. I mean, the basic things don't change because the basic truths are true, but my understandings change because as I increase in knowledge, and that's what I've seen in our scholars historically, is that they change over time. Imam al-Ghazali changed radically in his life. Many of them had radical changes in their lives, changes of understanding. But there's a consistency, and that's what you should see, is the search for truth is a consistent search. I would say it's more of a paring down or focusing or removing the rough from the diamond. So I really think that from that point of view, we do have some serious problems. On the other hand, I would say that the Muslims potentially, we hold within our community the potential for human restoration. I mean, I don't think anybody else has it, personally. If I did, I'd be with them. But I really don't believe anybody else has it. George Bernard Shaw said that the religion of the future would probably be Islam. And it's interesting that a Baptist minister in England, a very prominent Baptist minister, just wrote an article saying that England would probably end up becoming a Muslim country. Now, that's partially demographics, which is true. And I think that's true in a lot of places. But I also think that Islam... See, prior to the modern world, the ancient world was a childish world. People were much purer and they were much simpler. And so the dictates that came from God were just very clear. Don't do this, do that. It was very paternal. And in fact, in some ways, that's why even Ibn Taymiyyah allowed for the possibility of father being a pre-Islamic name of God that was abrogated by Islam, the idea of having a parent God. Because there is a paternalistic aspect to God in the Old and New Testaments. Islam is speaking much more, almost God is entering into a type of dialogue with his creation where he's using arguments to convince them, like, look at this. Look at haven't you considered the camel? Look at the rain. Look at the cycles. Look at the clouds. Haven't you considered how they come together? Look at the bees. Look at the honey that's coming out. Look at the cow. And look at how that milk between the filth and between the blood, you get this milk that's delicious to drink. Look at the alternation of night and day. Wafi anfusikum. You know, look at your own selves. Haven't you considered that? It's speaking to people as if they're intelligent and is not saying, do this, don't do that. If you don't do this, I'll wipe you out. If you do that, it's not paternalistic. It's very adult in its conversation with Bani Adam. And I really think partly because we've grown up, that there are things now that we know about the world that we're not known. We understand nature to a much greater degree than the ancients. To the ancients, it was very magical. And so the idea of hidden forces was very understandable that they came to those conclusions. For the modern man and woman, we know the universal law of gravity. We know what's holding planets in place. I mean, these are extraordinary milestones in human development. On the other hand, we're incredibly ignorant. The ancients were actually, I think, in a more profound and wise way, they were in some ways much deeper than we were. But I mean, I really do believe that is an aspect that Islam addresses that pre-modern religions don't, that it is an adult religion. It's speaking to human beings. I mean, what Nietzsche said was Islam presupposes men. In other words, it presupposes adults. It's assuming there's actually intelligent adult people that are going to hear this message and understand it. And that's why I really feel that this is the religion that can speak to the modern world and the postmodern world. In a way that I really believe, even though I believe in the truth of those pre-modern religions, I believe they were for their time and place, and that their time and place has passed. This is the age of Islam, and I really believe that we as Muslims must recognize that, and we must rise up to the challenge of our time in delivering this message in the clearest, the most truthful, and the most beautiful way that's possible.
Like to say thank you, and may Allah bless you and reward you on behalf of our listeners on South Africa Radio.